This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave. James McDaniel plays Arthur Fancy on NYPD Blue. He's a very decent, ethical lieutenant who backs up his men when they deserve it. An African-American, Fancy is acutely aware of racism, but does his best to keep his emotions in check. Terry Gross spoke with James McDaniel in 1996. She asked him if the character of Arthur Fancy was written specifically for him.
Yeah, and I could really never figure that out. Because they said, you're going to be the lieutenant of this squad of detectives. And I was saying, out of all the things that I could be doing, I see myself much more on the street, running around chasing perps, you know. I'm not that old yet, you know. How am I going to live up to that? That's not the way I see myself at all, you know. I mean, when we had started talking about this, I was, you know, it was around the time I was doing 6 Degrees of Separation. I was playing a 21-year-old interloper into a family's life. You know, I was playing a kid. And they wanted me to play this leader of men, and I knew that I was going to be working with Dennis Franz, and, you know, I mean, I want to be a leader, Dennis Franz. So I had to figure out a way to make that work, and I got gradually I got used to the idea.
You had to figure out how to be a convincing authority figure.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
Well, how'd you
a
do
lot
it?
Of thought went in. Well, one of the things that I realized from, you know, my years of being on the stage is if you want somebody to do what you want them to do, the best way to do it is quietly. For example, if someone's making a move to the door and your next line is stop, the best way to do it is to just say stop as quietly as possible so that it's barely audible to the audience, because that actor has to stop after all, right? So if you scream, that means that you have to scream in order to make that person hear you. But if you do it very quietly, he's got to turn around. And that connotes power. And that's one of the things that I use on the show, is that he's very confident, and he makes his wishes known by just really never raising his voice. He just says what he wants done. That's one thing. And then I started to reflect on the people in my life that I knew that were authority figures, and I kind of, you know, spiced it with all those influences I've had.
Who are you thinking of, father, grandfather?
My grandfather, definitely. He was that kind of stoic kind of guy that you didn't really know who he was. But he was, I guess when I was a kid, he worked on the railroads, you know, laying tracks. He was a big guy and very, very quiet. He would sit in the chair and watch Ed Sullivan every Sunday. And all the kids knew when they were in the living room not to even cross his sight path, you know. And he would never raise his voice, but you never wanted to see him angry, because you knew that there was a volcano under there. But then he would take a pole and some wire and a woman's stockings and make butterfly nets for all the kids and take you to the park when the butterflies were all over the place. And he would just sit there, and we'd run around for hours just chasing these butterflies, and he would just talk to us. So we had this gentle side. Every night he would take all the kids, because I saw him on holidays, Christmas and things like that. And he would take all the kids one by one to the bathroom at, like, you know, 12 o'clock at night when he went to bed. You wouldn't even remember it. I have a vague recollection of it because I was always, you know, really drowsy. So he's a very loving man, but in a way he was very distant.
Now, one of the things you give the impression of in NYPD Blue is of always, like, checking your emotions, reining them in. You always get the feeling that there's stuff this character is thinking that he's not showing and he's not talking about. Do you feel the same way about the character? Do you feel like that's your approach to him?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, you know, this is a cognitive thing that I actually, it doesn't just happen. I don't just show up on the set and it happens like magic, you know. It's, you know, I'm acting. The thing that you have to remember when you do something like that is, when you have a secret, you have to really have a secret. Because if you don't have a secret, the audience will know that you don't have a secret. It won't just appear that way because you just don't say anything, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so if there's stuff that you're not revealing, you have to know what it is that you're not revealing.
Exactly.
So what are some of the things that your character knows about his real feelings that he never tells us about?
Well, one of the things with him is that he's got this black thing, and he seethes about, he's definitely a seether. And He sees a certain amount of injustice, and he's dedicated to overcoming that with every fiber of his being, and it drives him. It makes him almost sick sometimes, because he feels as if he can't be wrong, and everybody should be allowed to feel that they can be wrong sometime, just fly off the handle, say things they don't really mean. But he's so connected to that as a black man. Once he leaves his house, you know, once he puts on his suit, he becomes this other individual. And it's really interesting to me, and it's something that we really haven't gotten into, is I'd like to see him on the other side of that door much more.
At home, you mean?
At home. Just in his in his private life, when he can let that guard down. Because, you know, that's a part of his secret. I know what he does when he lets his guard down.
What does he do?
Oh, lets himself be crazy. He lets his anger come to the surface. He lets his humor come to the surface.
Now, you know how you were talking about your character as having kind of very, very deep and very strong feelings about race in America, but keeping that in check on the job, just keeping that in and just kind of steaming without revealing what he's really thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been like that yourself on the subject of race?
Oh, yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, it's one of the things that motivates me. It's been a great motivator for me. I'm very fortunate to be a black man, you know? This is going to sound awful, but it, to a certain degree, has kept James McDaniel from being mediocre. I really think it's one of the driving forces behind me to prove that that I can be good, that I can be somebody, and to make the world see, so that other people like myself can kind of feel like they're somebody. I mean, that sounds pretty pompous, I guess, but that's one of the things that drives me. You know, I see double standards all the time, and I can never really understand it. I really won't be happy until people can just walk into the room, and we live in a colorless society, and I feel like we're so, so far away from that. People just need to look at each other and talk to each other, and from making that assessment, decide whether or not they like each other, just based on what they hear. What they believe is in someone else's heart.
There was a great episode of NYPD Blue a while back in which race was one of the subjects. And Sipowicz had used a racial epithet with someone on a case that he was working after that person used that word in describing himself. So Sipowicz was accused of being a racist, but he defended himself by saying, well, he used it to describe himself first, and I was just following up on it. And then you and he have a big blow-up over this, and whether he, you know, you're accusing him of behaving poorly on the case, of being unprofessional on the case, and he's basically accusing you of playing the race card. Let me play that scene where you and he have that big encounter.
Okie doke.
Would have been smarter for you to go home when the shift ended. If you're going after me, you bring charges or let Quasi do it. Because I want a chance to answer him in front of somebody besides you.
Yeah, this is about me, Andy. I'm the racist.
I've said that word. I've thought it plenty, but I've never used it on a job till your hump pal put us on that road.
This isn't about a word, Andy, or your impure thoughts. It's about you making this case harder to work.
Not about you being black, huh? Not about giving some back to me?
It's about what I say it's about.
Then say, part of what it's about is watching me sweat.
Well, a hell of a lot went down today, so I'd have to check my notes. But I thought I'd spend some of that time trying to save your sorry ass.
Give me a break.
No, I'm not going to take you out, Andy. I move you out, my white bosses, they send me a little message. They send me another one just like you. But maybe that one can't do the job like you can.
Jeez, thanks a lot, boss.
If you go, it'll be somebody like Quasi, or like that reporter. I've been dealing with white cops like you ever since the academy. I can manage you with my eyes closed. Now maybe you can't handle a black man being your boss.
I can handle it. I've been covering you 3.5 years, except when you get so tied up in your brother crap, you won't let us work the streets. That's when you get yourself in trouble.
Hey, Lou, we got a report of a person shot near the Houston Street Projects. Want me to handle it?
Was it a homicide?
I don't know.
That teenage girl, the eyewitness, isn't she in those projects?
Yeah, I think we got him out, though.
Sylvie was involved there.
Check it out.
You want me to check it out?
Yeah. Sipwood's to handle it.
Did this scene and the whole episode lead to discussions about race off camera?
Well, I mean, we discuss race a lot anyway, you know, or we kind of used to, you know, especially me and Dennis, you know, because we come from two very different backgrounds. So, you know, we talk about race. It's a part of our dialogue. I mean, we spend a lot of time together, you know, off the set, you know, we're in the makeup trailer, you know, we're sitting there having lunch sometimes. We're in between shots, you know. It's not the time that it takes to take a take. It's the time between the takes that takes the time. So we're sitting together for a long time. And race comes into the dialogue a lot.
What kind of things do you talk about?
Well, I mean, for example, one of the conversations that Dennis and I had that was so memorable was him saying, what happened with, you know, like kids, you know, especially inner city kids and things like that. And cops, you know, what happened to Officer Friendly? You know, he couldn't understand why, you know, somebody would want to throw a brick at a squad car because they are there to protect us, to serve and protect. And I'm trying to tell him that, you know, maybe that's the way it was where he came from. But a lot of people don't feel that way. A lot of people feel that, they maybe are there to serve and oppress, maybe. And it's just a different point of view. And we go back and forth about that, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You know, one bad apple, you know, argument.
My guest is James McDaniel. He plays Lieutenant Arthur Fancy on NYPD Blue. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is James McDaniel. He plays Lieutenant Arthur Fancy on NYPD Blue. How did you prepare for the role of Lieutenant Fancy when the series was starting? Did you hang out with cops?
Yeah, that's the first thing. Yeah, and that was really interesting, too, when you're trying to fashion a character. Because the first thing you want to do, and, you know, hence the term role models, you know, you want to see the closest person that you could be to that guy. And, you know, Bill Clark, our technical advisor then, who is now one of our supervising producers, was hooking me up with a lot of people who did my job. And the guys were like, you know, hey, Joey, you know, could you run down and give me a cup of coffee? You know, they were all those kind of, you know, kind of bent nose kind of guys. And I could relate to them to a certain degree, but I just couldn't get that thing. I couldn't see me being them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were like father figures and stuff, you know? And I couldn't see me in that role. But I met this one black lieutenant named Gene Albright, who is much older than me. But he helped me out a lot because what it made me realize is what Arthur Fancy could be. That there wasn't like a strict stereotype or a mold that I had to come out of, because this guy had an art degree and he was very literate, and he was very different. He had a very, very high kind of nasal voice. He didn't strike me as being extraordinarily manly. And what that does when you see that is it releases you to other possibilities that maybe your imagination hadn't allowed you to accept.
After having played a cop yourself for several years, what do you think of cops now, and particular, you know, police relations in Los Angeles are so racially charged now, and have been for many years. Do you find yourself relating to the cops or what?
No, I keep it simple. I relate to people. You know, there's good cops and there's bad cops.
Right.
And, you know, bad cops make bad policy and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get just as exasperated by cops now as I ever did. You know, I mean, you know, I drive an expensive car. It's not unusual for me to be pulled over twice on the way home on any given evening, you know, because my windows are slightly tinted. I mean, we know what that's about. So I just take it kind of a person at a time, you know, knowing that it's human nature. There's some good guys and there's some bad guys. There's a real problem out in L.A., I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, when you're pulled over by a cop, I guess you're assuming it's because you're an African-American driving an expensive car. They think that there's something suspicious happening, is that?
Well, it's not specifically that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's as a cop, you are trained that you're supposed to spot things that are out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's what you think you're being trained to do. And in any individual's mind, it may be out of the ordinary that this guy is driving this car. Let's check this out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not necessarily a racial thing, but there are racial overtones within that observation.
Now, when that happens to you and you're pulled over, do you ever make a point of making sure that the cop knows who you are, what your role is, how paradoxical this whole situation is?
I don't lean on the show. Because
right.
That's just...
Do you know
means,
who
that,
I
that
am?
Gives me, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when those words come out of my mouth,
uh-huh.
That's going to be a big day.
Right.
That's really... I'm going to say, uh-oh, Jim, you've gone over to the other side. Things have gotten really bad. You are officially an L.A. jerk. But I do try to make some type of statement
like?
About it. But it's just what we said. You know, I'll make a big deal as to why the stop. You know, the first thing I do is I make sure that my automobile, everything checks out, even though my windows are slightly tinted. But, I mean, everybody's windows are tinted in L.A. You know, you can't drive a car that doesn't have tinted windows. Your upholstery gets ruined and you're hot all the time, you know. So I got the lightest tint possible. But everything else on my car checks out, and it's like right there, bam, open the glove compartment, boom, it's there. And from that point on, I just start talking to him. I start asking him why he's doing this. And I try to get into his psychology so that when we finally separate, he thinks about it a little bit. It was kind of an unusual experience.
What kind of reactions have you gotten after talking with the cops who pull you over?
Well, L.A. cops are tough because they have this veneer that's very unlike New York cops, whereby they try to act like perfect human beings. Hello, sir. How are you? You know, we're just about to shoot you, but have a nice day. You know, they go through some type of training for that. I don't know what it is. You know, it's like smile and hate you at the same time, you know. New York cop, if they don't like you, you know, they make no bones about it. It's like, I don't like you, buddy, right now, right here. Let's go. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Now, is there anything you've been able to use on NYPD Blue from your experiences, from your encounters with cops who've pulled you over?
Well, you know, if I was a street cop, there definitely would be. My approach would be to play one of those guys because, you know, that goes straight across race lines, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I've had that experience. That's why I say it's not necessarily a racial thing, because I've had that experience with black cops, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that hail fellow well met type behavior just as good as anybody else. So, if I was a street cop, I would probably play one of those guys. You know, I don't like just, you know, regular old heroes, you know, just, you know, Dudley Do Right, here he comes. I would play one of those kind of guys. Try to find the humanity in there someplace.
James McDaniel, a real pleasure to talk with you. Thank you very much.
It really was. I enjoyed that.
James McDaniel talking with Terry Gross in 1996. He plays the role of Lieutenant Arthur Fancy on NYPD Blue. The show begins its new season on Tuesday.